Hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. Okay, I have Chrissy Rutherford here.
Hi.
Senior fashion editor at Bazaar.com.
I am.
You're really young, which is, I mean, it's kind of amazing.
Not really. I'm not young. I'm older than you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, by what, like 2 years? 1 year?
No, I think 3 years.
How old are you?
I just turned 31.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
Okay, we're in the same ballpark. I feel like I got you at a good time because you just came back from an amazing Caribbean vacation. Where were you even?
I was in St. Martin.
Oh.
It was really nice, although it was not at all what I expected it to be.
What were you expecting?
I don't know. I guess I thought it was going to be like Jamaica, which is where I spend most of my time if I go to the Caribbean. But it was I stayed on the French side of the island. It's split half French, half Dutch, and it was really French. All French restaurants,
Speaking
French, and like predominantly white, which I thought was really surprising.
Did you see like the white women getting their hair braided on the beach? That always gives me like a hearty chuckle.
I actually didn't. Oh. I only saw like some kids with their hair braided, which I was actually surprised. I thought there was going to be a lot more braided hair and beads.
White women being like, this is my chance to get the cornrows that I've been seeing.
Well,
on
also
the
I was thinking that I might need to get my hair braided when I went down there, but I just decided to wing it.
Yeah, I mean, what's amazing about going on vacation, especially to a place like that, is packing the bare minimum of like beauty standards and just, even though you didn't wear sunscreen, which is
really bad.
Did your dermatologist give you a talking to?
No. So actually my dermatologist just made me feel so much better because she told me that when she doesn't pack the right sunscreen that she goes without it. Because I did put sunscreen on the first day, but it was like regular sunscreen for your body, like Neutrogena or something. And it started making me break out. So I can't do this.
So I feel like I know you because...
Well, we do know each other.
We know each other, of course. But also, I follow you on Instagram along with 25,000 other people. So I see, you know, your day-to-day, all these fabulous things you're doing. But I actually want to start from the beginning.
Sure.
So where are you from?
I'm from Bedford Hills in Westchester, New York. So just an hour outside the city.
Okay. Was it like very suburb? Like, did you go to a big suburban high school with cheerleaders and football players?
Yes. The whole suburban upbringing for sure.
Okay. And were you, I just know this from movies. I always wish that I went to a school like this with like outdoor lockers and the whole nine. Were there cliques like the sports people, the theater nerds? And where did you fit in?
For sure. Where did I fit in? I don't know. I had a really great group of friends. We weren't the popular girls, but we weren't unpopular. Like, there was only one group of popular girls. So, like,
And they're not cool now, right? That's always the case.
Yeah.
Okay. It's fine. You can say it. I'll say it for you.
I think since I was, like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, I definitely loved fashion, and I used to read Harper's Bazaar and Cosmopolitan and all these other magazines.
Yeah, me too. I can think back to having just these horrible, actually in retrospect, hideous collages like on the inside of all of my closets with like cutouts of like Kate Moss and... Do you remember Gemma...
Ward. Yes, of course.
That was like... this is like now vintage, but like I remember like being like, oh my God, the new face of Prada, like... and there was another website that now the name is escaping me. Maybe it was the Fashion Spot, but it was like there was a time for like fashion fan nerddom, like
it
the
was
early
the fashion
internet
spot. And actually, the New York Times just did an article on this fashion community that was called Fashion Fags, but then they shortened it to fashion after they realized that might be offensive to some people.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, that was such an amazing forum for people who, like, were really obsessed with fashion. Like, I think that, I don't know, people's interest in fashion has totally changed today. And I think that it's so easy to consume.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everywhere. You see it on Instagram. You see it on Pinterest.
Right.
On Facebook.
Right.
You know, everywhere. And I remember when I was in high school, I literally used... every month when I would get like the new Harper's Bazaar, the new Vogue, I had a friend who also loved fashion. And we would literally talk on the phone.
And just go through it page by page. I love that.
And like talk about the advertisements.
Yes, yeah.
And all the editorials.
Everything, yep.
And you just like lived it, yes, breathed yes, it. It was yes, everything.
Yes. And I feel like there's such a big difference between, so some people say they love fashion and they really mean that they love to shop.
Right.
And then there's appreciating the industry, the art form, the makeup. Like, I feel like the true fashion fans, they know who did the hair on an image. They knew who the photographer was. They know who right, did the styling.
Right.
They know every single aspect of what went into creating that image.
100%.
And that's what makes it, like, so fun to follow.
Totally.
But, like, I've fallen off. I mean, you work in the industry, but I don't...
But I've also fallen off. Like, I don't read fashion magazines anymore. I see things on Instagram or, you know, on the internet while I'm looking for ideas and stuff like that. That's really the only time that I see,
right,
like, fashion editorials.
So you knew you wanted to kind of have a career in fashion, or did you knew you loved fashion, but did you know you wanted a career in it?
Yes. I just didn't really, I don't think I knew what it all really entailed.
Right.
But I always thought that I wanted to be the person that picked the clothes that,
you know,
you see in the magazine. Right. Like, that was my thinking.
Okay. And it's interesting because the job you have now technically didn't really exist.
Right. Like, I don't think I ever thought that I would be doing what I'm doing now. I don't even think when I got my first job in fashion, or like even my first job in publishing, that I really thought that I would be doing everything that I'm doing now.
Right. And where did you start?
My start was a little rocky because I graduated college in 2008, and it was like right when the economy was going to shit, for lack of a better word. And so, you know, I had interned at Harper's Bazaar for 2 summers while I was in college. So when I graduated, I was like, oh, I'm getting a job like right away.
Right.
My editors that I reported to loved me, like, you know, sold. But it wasn't easy at all. And of course I took the summer off because I wanted to enjoy myself. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, by August when I started looking around and like emailing the editors that I had reported to, it was just like there was nothing.
Right.
So I actually got my start freelancing at a multi-label showroom. They did the sales for a lot of cool contemporary brands, a lot of them European. And so I would work there during like the fashion market period. So that would start like during New York Fashion Week and last until maybe 2 weeks after Paris.
So you got like all of the craziness.
Kind of. So I was, you know, all the buyers would be coming in to buy for the following season. And even though it wasn't what I thought I wanted to do, it was still really interesting to see people like Linda Fargo come in, or, you know, all these boutique owners, and watch them, you know, buy for the following season and see like why they picked, you know, the things that they were going to sell.
Yes.
You know, some people would be like, oh, my customer only wears dresses. My customer loves suits or something like that.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
To appreciate a job like that, you almost have to have that like fashion nerd obsession, because the hours are long, the pay is low. So Linda Fargo walking in has to make your day, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you have to like, you have to like really love it to tolerate the amount of work that goes into it.
100%. And like relish those like little moments and like seeing the new clothes
mm-hmm.
and like getting to touch them and, you know, all the little details. Yeah. Cause I remember when I was an intern and, you know, I would post things on Facebook for my internship, and then some girls would like message me and be like, oh my God, your internship looks so cool.
You're
like,
living the dream.
Can you get me an internship there? And I would tell them like, listen,
I had to fight my way here. Yeah.
Also like, unless you really want to do this with your life, it is not fun. Cause I would not, while I obviously learned a lot in my internship, like, it's really tough.
Of course, yes.
And if you don't love it,
you can't do it.
You won't last a week.
You can't do it. I loved the Vogue internship. It was very difficult, but I was confused by girls who complained, because I was sort of like, you're at Vogue. Like,
right.
Andre Leon Talley says, jump, how high? Right? It's like it's almost like you're working in the temple of like a bazaar or a Vogue, and you just have to do what's asked of you. And you have to come in with that expectation. And some people aren't, I feel like if you aren't going to make it in fashion, you probably find out within the first year.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah. I also, one thing that I really miss about working in fashion, it's been a 1 year anniversary out of fashion. I really miss working with women and seeing strong women in leadership positions everywhere, because it's something that you really take for granted when you work at a different company where there are, right. You know, there are a few senior women, but when you work in fashion, you really get to see smart, intelligent, dynamic, amazing women everywhere you look. And that's like, kind of like can't be beat.
Right.
On the other side of that, I went to an all-girls school, so I also know how girls can be.
Yes.
There's a competitive that I think exists amongst women that you don't find in more like mixed
right.
gender situations. Do you find that?
Yes. I would agree with that for sure.
I also noticed that I feel like, you know, you are one of the few Black women that's working in fashion at your level, right? And I feel like there's a camaraderie, yeah. at least from the outside looking in, it feels like there's this real like camaraderie.
Yes.
Are you friends with like other fashion editors of color?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's something that's, you know, really strengthened like over the last, I would say, 2 years. Like, of course, there's like a few Black editors that I've always known. Nikki Ogunaki, who works at Elle.com, mm-hmm. she and I actually interned together at Bazaar.
No way.
So, yeah, there's been a few that I've known or have interacted with, but I feel like there is now this, you know, camaraderie between all the other Black editors that you see at Fashion Week, and
right.
everyone kind of knows one another. So once you meet a few, then you start to meet more, and
you get
and
into the fold.
It really is nice to have that. I will
yes,
say.
Of course, of course. What do you think you or other Black editors have to deal with that other editors don't have to?
I don't know. I've been asked before, you know, do I think that I faced obstacles getting a job or getting to where I was because mm-hmm. I was Black, and I don't know. I think I had a challenging time just like anyone else who
right.
was probably just trying to break into
right.
the industry. I do think it's challenging because, of course, there are so few Black editors in mm-hmm. the industry. And I think that there were definitely one or two occasions where I showed up for an interview and I could kind of tell mm. on the interviewer's face that they were surprised mm. that I was Black.
Mm.
But
yeah.
I don't know. I think that I've always come across as super passionate
yes.
About my job, and I think that people can really see that. So
yeah.
I would like to believe that the color of my skin has never really
right.
impeded my success.
Right. And then in a weird way, it can also be a benefit, right, to be a woman of color. And
yeah. And I think that, you know, having that perspective, especially
yes.
Right now,
yes, yes.
because there are few, you know, there are a few of us, and I think that everyone is really looking for that perspective right
yes,
now and making
yeah.
sure that, you know, our voices are heard. So I think that it's really important to be able to bring that to the table, and also not to say that I can obviously speak for all
yes.
Black women,
yes.
and I'm actually really proud that I work with a team that is super mindful of,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
diversity in general.
Yeah. Do you think that tokenism, so let me go back a bit. More so now than ever, there are Black people that are integrated into like fashion campaigns and beauty campaigns.
Right.
Do you worry that it's a trend? And like all trends, it will fade away? Or do you think it's really a permanent change that we will start to be more mindful of representation?
I definitely don't think it's something we're going to see go away. I think that just people are demanding this. And I actually think that now when I see campaigns, or especially during Fashion Week, when you go to a show and you see no models of color.
It's like, it looks so old-fashioned,
it's,
right?
It's just so blatant.
Yes, exactly. It's like, what?
It stands out so much to me. And I never really thought about it before, you know, when I was first starting out, because right. it was just like, this is the way
this
things
is the
are.
Way it is. Yes, yes, wow.
But now, yes, it has definitely changed, and it just seems so blatant. And, you know, I hate to think that there are campaigns that people are casting and thinking, okay, well, we just need like one black girl in this, like, so people don't mm-hmm. get upset. but there are so many amazing black models
yes,
right now.
There are
so many. And I mean, I guess, hey, if there is a quota and they're getting involved, then that's great. And they're proving themselves. But I do think that, you know, it's just something people are taking into consideration
yeah.
more.
Yeah. Which is good and appreciated, even totally. If their intentions aren't wholly pure.
Right.
The end result is the same. The representation is still
exactly.
there. Exactly. Yeah. You work, where's the off? Where's the, it's the Hearst building, which
yes.
is by the Time Warner Center.
Yes. 57th and 8th.
So getting dressed every day to walk into work at a fashion magazine where everyone does fashion, beauty, like, is it, like, I have a hard time getting dressed and I work around people that don't even care.
care.
How is it getting dressed in the morning? Because women are the harshest, you know, we all dress for other women.
Right.
How is it getting dressed? Like, do you lay out your clothes the night before?
No,
I would have, like, panic attacks.
I don't. Yeah, I've actually become more casual in the way that I get dressed lately. Like, I never used to be a jeans person, and now I wear jeans pretty much every day.
But when you find the right jeans, who's your brand? Because everyone has, like, their,
okay.
like, mine is Mother.
Mine is Citizens of Humanity.
Okay.
They've, like, changed my life.
yes, once you find the right ones, it's, like, done, duh. Like, what was I doing before?
Yeah. And I don't know. I think that there's something cool to the way, to how versatile, like, jeans can be and mm-hmm. how different you can play with them. Like, you know, they can obviously be super casual or mm-hmm. you can dress them. And I think, like, dress, interestingly, like, while wearing jeans,
yes.
I think is just so cool.
It's an accomplishment.
Yes.
It's an accomplishment. do people wear heels at work?
Yeah. My fashion director, Carrie Pieri, she wears heels every single day of her life.
Amazing. I really envy that. And, like,
yeah.
I wish
she's on the smaller side.
Okay.
So she just, like, flats are not an option for her. And she's pregnant right now. So
what?
It'll be
she's wearing heels while pregnant.
So it'll be funny to see how long she lasts.
I know. Oh my God. That's amazing.
I go back and forth. I don't wear super high heels anymore because I just can't.
It's, like, painful.
My knees are bad.
It's not good for you, and it's painful.
So I like a stacked heel. I like a short 2.5-inch heel.
Mm-hmm. You have such amazing skin, and I feel like every time I see your photos, you
oh
look so
God.
Like fresh faced. Do you wear makeup to work?
I do.
But, like, it's, like, very, it's, like, you do the no makeup, makeup look perfectly.
Yes. I don't like to look like I'm wearing makeup.
Yeah.
And actually, very recently, I just started wearing foundation. Like, I don't know. I always had, like, a weird relationship with foundation.
Because, like, I hear you.
For so long,
it's hard to find your skin color.
That,
exactly.
And also, like, for so long, I didn't have good skin. So I thought that, like, you know, putting foundation on my skin would be bad. But
you
then
have
I'm like,
great
people.
Skin.
But then I'm like, people who have good skin don't need to wear foundation. So I was very confused as to, like, who foundation was
who is
actually
it
for.
You have really good skin, though. There was a time where you didn't.
I have struggled with acne for what feels like my entire
really?
Life. Like, since I was a teenager. I've always had bad skin. And, you know,
But your skin is totally clear now. So what have you, do you take Accutane or?
No.
Okay.
But it almost got to that. So I'm actually in the process of writing a story about this for Bizarre, but I will tell you
yes,
and your
give us the exclusive.
Listeners.
Yes.
So about a year and a half ago, my acne was always, like, just, you know, bothersome whiteheads
the usual. But like a year and a half ago, I started getting cystic acne, which is the absolute worst.
Yeah. You wake up and you're like, what am I looking at in the mirror today?
I had never had it before. And like, you know, it would just be like one here, a couple weeks, one there. But then all of a sudden it was just like coming more and more and more. I was literally like at my dermatologist's office every other day getting cortisone injections, extractions. I'm allergic to amoxicillin, so a lot of acne medication I can't take
it,
which also I don't want to be taking antibiotics.
Right.
And so I was using topicals for a while, like Retin-A Micro, and it helped for a little bit when I was just had whiteheads, but when you have cystic acne, it doesn't help. Like literally nothing helps. Cystic acne.
Yeah. A good attitude helps. I am not my skin. Yeah.
I know. Ugh.
Yeah.
Like having clear skin for a little while and then having cystic acne, your late 20s, like approaching 30, is really like a test for your self-esteem. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, thank God I have like a good sense of self-esteem. So I, you know, can look at it as though, yes, I'm not my skin.
Right.
And I feel like cystic acne is weirdly becoming more and more common because I, you know, obviously I'm out all the time and I see a lot of girls with it.
Yeah, it is. It is actually fairly common.
And, yeah, so I, you know, my dermatologist kept like, you know, switching up my prescription for retinoids and everything and nothing was helping. I started seeing this, celebrity esthetician, Renee Rouleau. She's actually based in Texas.
Oh my God.
But I saw her, but she travels to like LA and New York. And actually the first time I saw her was when I was in LA for work. And so she's like one of, I think the few, estheticians, and she has her own skincare line to create a product for cystic acne. But acne, you know, like
what's the name of her line so people that are dealing with this?
Renee Rouleau, it's her name.
Okay, Renee Rouleau. Okay,
so but what she has told me is like, you know, obviously we know like there's no two bodies that are the same, and like acne is kind of the same way, so like the product works really well for some people. It didn't really work for me. Like,
okay.
I think it helped a little bit, but not to the extent that I would have liked. So then, of course, I spent a lot of time searching on the internet, searching, searching. Also, my doctor had prescribed me spironolactone, which a lot of people are taking right now for cystic acne, but it was giving me chest pains.
Oh, God.
Which is a similar side effect I was having to when I was on birth control for my skin. So couldn't, like my body just
have bad skin than have chest pains, right?
So I just, my body does not like my hormones like being toyed with.
Yeah.
So yes, after much research on the internet, I found this all natural supplement that a lot of people were talking about.
I'm so excited to hear you say this because I'm like a big advocate for natural beauty. Okay, continue. Yes.
So this supplement called DIM, D-I-M, and it's based in cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and cauliflower, like cancer patients take it. It helps to balance your estrogen levels because my acne was totally hormonal. It was predominantly on the lower half of my face.
And do you still take this now?
Yes. I'm not taking it like every single day like I used to. But literally 2 weeks after taking it, my skin totally changed.
Wow.
And
like,
and I've been on it since November, I think.
That's well, it's working. Your skin is flawless. That's amazing.
It's totally worked. I mean, I'm still getting like little whiteheads here and there, but like I haven't had a cystic pimple in so long. I know.
I am such a cheerleader for natural beauty because I think most skincare brands are just a bunch of BS. And I think that, you know, the turmeric and honey and egg white and green tea that you have at home are the best remedies for your skin. It does take some like testing and learning what works.
Totally.
But it's so worth it because a lot of the chemical prescription grade skincare and medications are actually really harmful for you.
Yeah.
So that's good. It's also good, though, I would say, that you worked with a dermatologist, because a lot of people don't see dermatologists at all.
Right.
And you can self-diagnose, but I think it is good to have, like, an expert
right.
look at your skin.
For sure. But I am glad, you know, that I did my own little research, because I don't think there's any dermatologist that's going to tell you that you should take the supplement that you can literally buy over the counter.
I order it
on Amazon.
Right.
And literally, you know, after months and months and months of, you know, seeing a dermatologist, and I was like really at wit's end.
You were like, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And so. I'm imagining I'm Chrissy. I'm in the .com section with all of the editors from all of these places, and I have a skin problem. Like, do you just like tap the beauty editors? Like, excuse me, I have a question.
Yeah, my beauty editor actually also recommended something really awesome to me that I've been using, which is glycolic acid peels.
Ooh.
So I also read about them from Ashley Weatherford. She's the beauty editor at New York Mag.
Yes.
Her Into the Gloss interview, she mentioned that she had been using glycolic peels from Austin and Kane. So I asked my beauty editor to call them in for me. And she said, like, you know, my beauty editor asked me, are you exfoliating? And I was like, oh, well, I have like one of those brush thingies that I use when I wash. When I wash my face. And she was like, you know, I don't use those anymore. Like, I do a chemical exfoliant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that totally changed my life. I use my little glycolic pads every morning and every night.
Yes.
And like, my skin has never been softer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so using that, and like, I'm still using my retinoids a little bit because, you know, they're anti-wrinkle.
Yeah. But retinoids are interesting because some people get really bad dry skin from them.
Yes.
So
you have to ease into it.
Yes.
I'm on like the highest level now.
You reach the max.
Yes.
But you're probably using a nice moisturizer to like seal
in. And also like my skin is the opposite of sensitive. Like I could literally put anything on it and it would be fine. I do use it with a good moisturizer and I don't use it every day anymore.
Right.
But like, yeah, when I first started using it, like my skin was peeling like crazy.
Because it was
your skin adjusts to it and like my skin is never dry.
Yeah.
I'm like, can someone tone down the oil that's just
your skin is perfect. You have like, what's like body dysmorphia for skin? You have perfect skin. But I think that we're always very critical of ourselves. It's hard to ask what a typical day is because no day is the same. But like, general, high level. What time do you get in?
Lately, I've really been pushing it. I mean, I get in. Well, of course, when I wake up, I check my email. So if there's anything urgent, I tend to that. But I normally get in around 10.
Okay. Same with me at Viacom.
Yeah, I feel like most creative offices start at 10. And although, like, my junior editors who cover news start
they have
much
to be early.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you know, I spend a lot of time checking my email. Sometimes I feel like I spend all day in my email.
We all do.
Like, there's two types of people. It's like the people who are on email and like are good at email stuff. And then like the people who get shit done.
I know.
Because you can't get shit
you
done.
You can't do both.
If you're in your email all the time. Then, like, for instance, I'm styling a beauty shoot on Thursday. So I literally on the plane to St. Martin last Thursday, I started sending some requests for clothes that I wanted. So today I had to kind of hit the ground running and like do the rest of the stuff that I wanted, making sure things are coming in.
So when you say requests, you are requesting
samples from publicists.
From publicists.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that people maybe outside of the industry don't understand is that like fashion shows have a purpose.
Right.
They invite the editor so that they can see the clothes that they will then use and share with millions of people out into the world, right? Like your image that you produce is going to be seen by millions of people.
Right.
And it's a brand wants you to pick their stuff.
Totally.
And there are a lot of people at fashion shows now that are like influencers, blog, you know, they're there to have fun and get a great Instagram post. And then there are people like you that are like, I'm here for work.
My job.
Yes. You're like, can you please like stop taking selfies in front of me? I'm trying to like actually see the clothes. Does it frustrate you?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to, like, I'm not going to, like, hate on bloggers because yeah. I'm friends with, you know, a couple bloggers, and I do respect what some of them do.
I mean,
I can't say I
respect all of them. Yeah.
I can't say that all of them have the integrity of, you know, the rest of the industry. I just think that it's an interesting dynamic because when I was growing up, and as far as, you know, I've always known, people that work at fashion magazines are the authority.
Yes, yes.
In the industry.
Yes.
But especially like when you work online, even though I work for one of the biggest fashion brands, and, you know, Bazaar is the oldest fashion magazine. We're actually mm-hmm. celebrating our 150th anniversary this year.
Lots of fun events coming up.
Yes. Sometimes it feels like you're treated like a second class citizen.
Doing digital?
Yes.
Wow. But that's
it's
incredible.
Like first it's like the fashion magazine. Sometimes it's the blogger. Wait, editor.
Bloggers are ahead of digital?
Yes.
At an established brand?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. At fashion shows, 100%.
Right, okay.
Because 100%.
Because they have now taken the place of a celebrity. Like, they're kind of the celebrity. Yeah.
Right. It's the blogger celebrity, mm-hmm. the magazine editor, then digital editor.
So the thing that's so interesting to me is the the reach, right? If you're thinking on an impressions level of digital content versus something that's in a print magazine, it's incomparable, right? Digital is so much bigger than print in terms of circulation and reach, but there's still 100%. This prestige around print. But I'm sure you've seen it change a lot since you've started.
Yes, but there are some people who like cling to print magazines. Like yeah. It's actually insane sometimes when, you know, we're talking to someone about doing a digital feature and they're like, oh, well, can this be in print too? And you're like, first of all, no, because we're a separate team. Yeah. So you'll have to go talk to someone else. But
and also like digital is what you want.
Yes. But there's something about that glossy paper that like has everyone like,
I'm really excited to ask you about do you want to start with products you love or trends that you really just want to see go away forever?
I'll start with products I love.
Okay. Start positive.
I have to go over three, and this is kind of based off of things that like I like use on a regular basis, obviously, because that's why I love them. So as I mentioned before, Renee Rouleau, who's a celebrity esthetician that I've been seeing, I'm like really lucky. I think that in the last like couple of years, I've managed to find these beauty people who are like super invested mm-hmm. in like my well-being, whether it's my hair or my skin. So Renee is so amazing. And like, even though she's based in Texas, like every month I get an email from her
really?
And she's like, how's your skin doing? What do you need?
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it makes me feel really good because it's like, okay, someone's in this fight with me.
Yes, yes.
And you know, I was the last time she emailed me, which I think was like in the beginning of February, actually, I was like super excited to tell her like, oh my God, my skin's been so good. So she gave me these two amazing face masks that I use every Sunday. One is this like triple berry peel and it smells as amazing as it sounds. I like always want to eat it. And it's like literally like feels like you're putting like a berry like puree on your face and it stings.
It has
like
all those fruit acids. Yeah.
But it's so good. And then after that, I do this, a rapid response mask. And it's like this like cool, like jelly kind of mask that you put on your skin. And I always do it after I fly. Like I always bring it with me when I travel. And it's supposed to just like, you know, clear out your pores and make everything all nice and smooth. So that's super important to me. And so, yeah, I always use that mask when I travel, but otherwise I do it every Sunday. The triple berry mask first,
than the rapid response.
Friday night is my mask night. I feel like it's very important for a beauty routine to have a night. So like Sunday night's your night. Yes. Okay.
And then what else do I love?
What do you use? You have beautiful, healthy hair. What do you do for your hair?
Oh, my hair. Oh my God. My hair has been like such a journey.
Are you natural?
I am. Yeah. Oh,
gosh. We could do a whole nother hour on this.
I know. For two and a half years now.
Okay.
I don't do my own hair though. Like ever. I never wash my hair. It's just I have too much of it and I really can't deal with it.
But it's so thick and beautiful. So you go to someone, they trim it, they blow it out, flat iron it.
I get a blowout pretty much once a week. Sometimes I'll go like every other week. Like
must get expensive, no?
Kind of.
Where do you go?
So I have like my main hair girl, Liz Owusu, who I've been seeing for like 6 or 7 years now.
And she's some like famous celebrity person.
She's worked with she's worked with some celebrities, but she has a salon in Bed-Stuy. Okay. So I travel all the way out there. She's totally worth it.
I mean, of course, once you find the right person.
Yeah, you can't. And I found her very randomly at a salon in Soho. And then I would see her there. And then she's like, I'm going to open my own salon. So I followed her. And she has like been so invested in my hair. Like I can't get a trim without us like having a conversation about it first. She actually won't let me cut my hair right now. So, you know, I've been,
that's through. Good. So many people don't care about your hair at all. I had a horrible experience getting heat damage, but from like a flat iron that was too hot.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, literally never again will I trust someone to put heat on my hair, because
I know, it's really tricky. So yeah, she's been through everything with me when I was still relaxing my hair. I was relaxing my hair while having a weave, and then she like got me to stretch out my relaxer until I eventually just stopped it completely. Yeah,
'cause you don't really need, I mean, relaxers are very unnecessary.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote a story like a couple years ago for Bazaar about
why I relaxed
my hair, eventually going to write something about like, you know, being natural now. And like, yes, I will never say like, oh, I regret relaxing my hair, because who didn't do it? And it served a purpose.
Exactly.
And, you know, I didn't really know any better. But I think the most important thing though, it's not about, oh, you know, conforming to these white beauty standards.
Exactly.
It's more just like,
it's a personal choice.
It's a personal choice, but also like relaxers are like a terrible chemical, and who knows what the hell it's doing to close to our brains. Like who knows what the hell is going on.
All of the physical signals are there that it's not something you should be doing, right? It's like it gets put on your head and
it
like immediately
smells terrible,
you're like,
it's burning your scalp off.
Yeah.
Like
all of your biological signs are like nope, poison, don't do this. And we're like, it's getting so straight. Yeah.
Yeah. And part of the reason I think why I relaxed my hair was that I didn't know that if you had natural hair that your hair could
be
as
this straight. Yeah. Yeah. Your hair is super straight. Do you ever wear your hair curly?
I haven't yet. I want it to grow a little bit longer because
your hair is long.
I mean, not really, but because I have a blunt cut when it is curly, like I have seen it you know, out and curly before, it has a very weird shape because of my blunt cut.
Gorgeous.
It's like short at the bottom and then like kind of goes out on
but
the
I feel
sides.
Like that's really cool. Have you ever tried a straw set?
No. What's that?
A straw. It's like they put your hair in like little rods and you sit under the dryer and like it's like perfect spirals.
Oh.
I'll show you some pictures after. Okay. I feel like I would love to see you with curly hair. But
I have like perfect ringlets. At least like in the back, the top.
Everyone's
so
texture is different,
because it's just like heat trained and like so it's just like limp. It's limp.
Yeah. But even if you never used heat on your hair, most people have multiple textures on their head. It's very rare to have like a uniform texture everywhere.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, a novice to this whole thing.
Do you have any girl crushes? You mentioned Rihanna.
Rihanna. I mean, I love her so much.
What is it about Rihanna that you love so much?
I love how fearless she is about beauty. Like, for so long, you know, I was so, like, caught up in, like, you know, wanting to have my hair long and, like, wanting to have a weave and, like,
thinking that, like, you know, that was when I looked the best and the sexiest. And, like, literally, Rihanna looks sexy no matter what. And it's because it just, like, it's emanates from within. Like, she is so confident and badass, and she just owns who she is and, like, does not apologize for anything. She just is who she is. She dresses like a boy. She dresses like a girl. She doesn't give a fuck.
And for, I feel like for so long we've been taught that long hair equals sexy, feminine, beautiful. And she just kind of crushes that. It's so true. The girl crush that I'm like coming to terms with now is because I've been watching this horrible show on HBO called Big Little Lies.
It's like, not a horrible show though.
I think it's horrible.
No, it's amazing. So
bad. I like watch it and I'm like, I'm watching a daytime soap.
Are you serious? I think it is so good. And it's like, I think it's just cool to see such amazing actors in a TV series.
Okay, so you know who my crush is going to be, right? It's Zoe Kravitz.
Oh, yes.
I'm just, like, watching her, and I'm just like, am I even straight? Like, what are you? You're so gorgeous. You're so cool. You seem so comfortable in your own body. She's, like,
Her body is awesome.
Yeah. Seems like she does, like, a lot of working out.
Yes. I also think Nicole Kidman is looking really good. I feel like she's, like, kind of laid off the face stuff, and she just looks like herself, but like really awesome,
really, really good. Her like awkward rape scenes with her husband. Oh my god, make me so uncomfortable. They just make me so uncomfortable. I'm just like, okay, they're fighting. Like he's gonna start raping her soon, and like But anyway, that show aside, let me hear the beauty trends that you want to just go away. take a sip.
I didn't really give much thought to this because, I know what it is.
Okay.
It is this whole obsession with injecting your lips, the fake eyelashes, the everything.
Yeah. Just detached from reality.
It's just so weird. And also from my perspective as like someone like, you know, I've never thought that I had, like, super big lips or small lips. I just thought, like, you know, I have, like...
Right. I look decent, like a person.
I have decent lips. I have nice eyelashes.
You have gorgeous eyelashes and gorgeous eyebrows.
So now it's, like, all these people are, you know, doing all these synthetic things. And then you're like, so now I look like shit. Like now I need to get eyelash extensions and now I need lip injections like to compete. And I'm not going to do that. So everyone just
interesting.
Can we just like calm down?
Wait.
And I don't hate on like plastic surgery, like get your Botox, you know, boob job, whatever.
Right. Do what makes you happy. But I can see from your point of view, like you have these like gorgeous full lashes. I don't have those. And then I get eyelash extensions and like, now we're on the same level. And it's like, you're like, okay, I was born this way. It's
not, like, I'm born this way.
It's not fair. Yeah. Okay. I feel that.
It's okay.
It has gotten out of hand.
It has.
It has. Okay. Anything else?
And I think it's, you know, it's like the whole Kylie Jenner effect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do respect that family and that I think they are, well, Kris Jenner is a genius. Like people who say like, oh, they're stupid. Like, don't know anything because you try to make yourself famous off of absolutely nothing. Like
zero
it's
talent.
Not hard.
Yeah.
And so what they've accomplished, I think, is truly brilliant.
It is.
But
the popularity of that look has, it's almost like everyone is morphing into the same person.
Yes. 100%.
It's like this weird cloning of this Kardashian look. And people are starting to become more and more similar in the way they present themselves.
When it's like, can't we just accept that we're all born differently? I mean, one of my best friends told me recently, like, that she can't follow any models on Instagram because they make her feel bad about herself. I'm like, but...
Okay, let's talk about that because one of the things that I love that you do, and I love when all of my friends do it, you posted, you know, you were just in St. Martin. You posted, like, pictures in your bikini.
Yeah, I always do.
You have an amazing body. But sometimes girls are extremely self-conscious. They're like, I don't know if I can post this, you know, like, I'm not perfect. Two, I think that a lot of people have this, I don't know, strange worry that it makes them seem vain to post a picture like that.
Right.
There is something so refreshing and nice about someone who is confident in her body and, like, not making excuses for that confidence.
Right. And, you know, I have a hard time with things like that. Even Emily Ratajkowski and all that she brings up mm-hmm. into conversation with her social media presence. And it's just like, let the girl live. Like, she was born with an amazing body.
Exactly.
And if you had that body, you would post photos of it all the time too.
Every day.
And stop with the like, oh, well, she's promoting like unrealistic body ideals. Like, it's not unrealistic because she exists and other people like her do exist.
Right.
And we just all have to accept that like we were all born differently. There's like, I was always brought up to like, you know, be who I am and accept what I looked like. And, you know, my dad always said to me, if you got it, flaunt it. And
exactly.
That's what I do.
Yes.
Like, I love my body, and like, I'm not even in great shape right now. Like,
no, stop
I'm
it.
Like, but it's about time that I start working out, because I've never been the person that works out. I eat whatever I want to eat. And yeah, of course, I'm still super thin. I still fit in all my clothes, but my body doesn't look like the way that I would like it to right now. So it's like, that is something on my mind that like, okay, you know, I need to like get into a little bit of a routine also just to be healthy. But like, I'm not going to feel remotely bad about posting a photo of myself in my bathing suit.
Yes,
like,
keep
if you have
coming.
A problem with that, then look the other way. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and like, speaking,
I will never like apologize for that.
Thank you. And like, speaking for all 25,000 of your followers, like, sorry, 25,000 plus, keep them coming. I love to see you enjoying your life. Like, you have a beautiful body, and I think what you said about loving your body, and back to Rihanna, like, it shows, right?
You can tell
when someone is showing their body because they love it and they're having fun and they're not self-conscious.
Right.
And that's, I feel like, infectious, and there should be more. More women should be posting.
Right. And I don't think, like, you know, that I necessarily, like, I don't think that I look like, you know, the models that are, like, I don't look like Emily Ratajkowski.
Are there any other trends that you find to be just, like, horrid? Other than, like, the fake?
I think the, like, people are calling it Instagram makeup.
Oh, yeah.
This, like, I don't know, the girls who are just, like, super done up all the time. Like, I understand, like, you know, we all like makeup, but I don't know. I just think that we should also be, like, showing who we really are.
Yeah, and there's a time and a place, right?
And there is definitely a time and a place. And I don't know, I just see, you know, some of these girls on social media who just are, like, piling on all this makeup and, you know, the contouring, the concealer, the brows, the, like, concealer under the brows to, like, make it look super sharp. And I'm just like, that is so much work. I actually did a Facebook Live video with a couple of my editors where we raced to see who could put their makeup on faster.
And I won. You were like, put on some chapstick in your eyes.
No, and I mean, I put on concealer, foundation, and everything else, but like, it was just funny, you know, one of my editors who's like, can only put on like her makeup, her foundation with like a beauty blender. And I just put things on with my hand and like slap it on. And I don't know.
I have like really, like a lot of conspiracy theories about the beauty industry, because I really do think that it is made to make you spend a lot of money and think that you need the next big thing.
Totally.
And I'm getting this feeling that all of these new tools are just like excuses to make you spend money. Because if you talk to a makeup artist, they have to use tools because it's not that hygienic to use their hands.
Right.
But they'll say, like, on myself, I just blend stuff with my finger.
And it's better because it's like the heat from your hands.
And people are using these, like, have you seen these, like, they almost look like toothbrushes now? Like these crazy makeup brushes that are like...
Oh, yes.
And I'm like, what
is this? I actually got a set of those, but I just can't be bothered.
Exactly.
I'm like, I don't need these.
Exactly. There's just like always something new that you like happen to need to spend money on.
Right.
Which is why...
And the beauty industry makes so much money because the markup is insane.
Oh, it's insane. Who are like pinned on my fashion street style inspiration boards, like in your fabulous pantsuits.
Because
I think you wear a pantsuit extremely well, and I
love a pantsuit.
I think a lot of girls have like your picture pinned to like goals wardrobe goals boards because
that Altazara suit that I ordered Fashion Week is pretty epic. I bought it at the sample sale, and it was a lot of money, like more money than I think I've ever spent on. Two articles of clothing, okay. So not that bad, but
it was made for you. You could have spent everything on it and it would have been worth it.
And you know, my dad is actually really into fashion.
I need to get your dad on the podcast. He sounds really cool.
My mom like could not care less.
What does your dad do?
My dad works for an interior decorating company, doing like commercial spaces. So I showed him the suit and he was like, "That's really nice." And he was like, "How much did you pay for it?" And I was like, "Don't tell mom." I paid $650 for it. And he was like, "That's reasonable."
He was like, "That's worth it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, phew.
I totally agree.
I like my dad understands like when I spend a lot of money on things and that makes me feel good. And there are like certain, I don't know, I've always really liked his style. So I feel like I have kind of adopted some things that he wears, I love the whole like masculine versus feminine kind of style. And I remember growing up, he always had this blazer that had like elbow patches, of course were like very cool. And back then, but I got a brown blazer. This is, I don't know, probably when I was first started working, that had, I mean, it was a light camel color and then had like a dark brown elbow patch. And it just like reminded me of my dad every time I wore it. But it was like a sleek looking blazer.
Yeah. There's something really nice about men's tailoring.
Yeah, for sure. I love suiting and I think it's going to be really, really big this fall. So I'm glad I'm ahead of the trend.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. We're at the last question.
Yes.
When do you feel most beautiful?
When do I feel most beautiful? That's a hard question. When I have clear skin.
I feel you, girl. I feel you. That's a very real.
I mean, having clear skin is just everything. Like when you feel like you don't have to put on a lot of makeup and... but of course, you know, that also just has to do with like self-esteem and your own confidence. I mean, you can have clear skin and if you don't feel, I mean, I feel like I have friends who have clear skin and they still don't feel confident in themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, you have clear skin. Like you have nothing to worry about.
What do you have to be upset about?
Like you have nothing. So I think when I have clear skin and I'm like just out of the shower, like my skin is nicely moisturized, super important.
Yeah.
Also in the summer, like I know this sounds like, well, it doesn't sound weird to you, but like being black in the summer is just like the best because when your skin is glowing, I'm like, literally, white people don't know what it's like to have skin that glows.
They don't know. Oh my gosh, being black in the summer, that's like literally the best thing.
Black all year round is awesome, amazing. But being black in the summer is
especially popping.
Oh my god.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming on the Naked Beauty Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Honestly, record for like 4 more hours.
Literally.
But you'll come back.
Yes.
Okay.
For sure.
Thank you.